I'm Terry David Mulligan. This is Tasting Room Radio for March the 13th, 2021. Several days after Steven Spurrier passed away, he left us. The single most popular wine voice in the world. He traveled the world. He tasted everything. He told people what he thought. Sometimes it was not what they wanted to hear, but he did it anyway. And as DJ Kearney will attest to, he found a kind way to do it. He was, of course, the man who thought of and organized the Judgment of Paris in 1976, which pitted, in a blind tasting, the very best of the French wines against California. And truly, California had no place in the world of wine, was dismissed totally by anybody in the wine world. And yet, they beat the French at their game. And what it did was, just beyond that, what it did was, it told the rest of the wine world that you could grow in your region and you could become a great wine in the world of wines. He opened the doors. He literally, South Africa and Asia and Australia, New Zealand, Canada, various parts of South America, they, all over the world, they realized that there was a way to make wines as good as the French and sell it to the rest of the world. Simple as that. So, I don't know what was settled there, but I do know one thing. For us, we made a friend because he really liked the people in Canada and he loved Canadian wines. And he especially loved BC, hanging out in BC. We're going to talk to two of his friends, DJ Kearney and Master of Wine, Rhys Pender. The last segment of this show, we are going to honor Amy Parks. Jason Parks will join us in the last segment of the show in loving memory of Amy Parks, an unfortunate victim of domestic violence. And Amy was a lover of rosé. She was Jason's cousin. And he has decided to pay tribute to her 4 years after her death. And always, he will always do this. $1 from every bottle of rosé sold will go to the Kelowna Women's Shelter. He'll explain how this is going to work. The show will begin with a remembrance of Steven Spurrier and finish with a loving memory of Amy Parks. Here we go. This segment of Tasting Room Radio is brought to you by The Hatch. And since they've opened the new Crown and Thieves, it's been a glorious, sheer and utter madness. The success has seen them already sell out of 4 wines, The Scoundrel Punch, Chenin Blanc, Gewurztraminer, and Broken Wing Merlot. But luckily, the latest bottling run has replenished the stock with new vintages of Winemaker's Wench, Mr. Higginbotham Chardonnay, the new Little Nipper Pinot Gris, and the brand new Pinky Blinders Rosé. And all 4 will make their first appearances this weekend. The wine club has been selling like crazy. And an obvious benefit is 1 active membership means you are a VIP at all of their locations. All the details at thehatchwines.com. As promised, DJ Kearney has joined me on Tasting Room Radio on this occasion of remembering the kind spirit, the giving spirit that was Steven Spurrier. And I'll remind you in a moment how we all gathered, the three of us. But DJ can be found as the director of wine at Terminal City Club in Vancouver. She is an expert for hire. She is an educator. She's an adjudicator. She is a teacher at PICA. And it was the adjudicator. It was the judge in you and the speaker in you that I found myself in Mendoza years ago. You and I and Steve Spurrier. And we were talking all about the Argentine Wine Awards.
That was a panic. So that was the 2014 Argentine Wine Awards, and it was a very, very intense week of judging. And Stephen and I were part of a group of experts from around the world. And I had heard about this thing called the Judgment of Paris, or the Paris Tasting. And, you know, this was before we were all on the internet, so it took some digging in libraries to find out about it, but I was fascinated by this person, what had taken place, the effect that it had on the wine world. And, you know, wine and Stephen's exploits were what got me very, very curious to learn more and push deeper into this industry. But the first time we met face to face was in Argentina. The night before we all started judging, we had a lovely cocktail party and dinner, and I went up and introduced myself. And Stephen was Stephen, just extraordinarily gracious, very involved. He's one of the greatest listeners I have ever met. And in the world of wine, there are a lot of people who want to talk, and there are not many people who want to listen. Stephen was a listener.
There you go.
And I said I was from Vancouver, and what an honor it was to meet him. And he immediately said, oh, do you know Vikram Vinge? Do you know Barbara Phillip? And we started to talk about BC. And then I spent the week with him. We weren't on the same panel, but we had shared dinners and drinking well into the evening. he's a very, very special person. And it was quite... it was shocking to wake up yesterday morning and learn that he had slipped away.
Yes. There came a moment, speaking of Judgment of Paris, when you helped to create the Judgment of BC for at least a 5-year span, maybe even 6. And
yes.
And Stephen was there.
Yes, absolutely.
Did you start with the idea of inviting him, or did you have the event formed and said he's the perfect person to come?
It was a triple pronged approach, and there were a couple of other people involved. Jack Meyer from Meyer Estates had been delivering his wine to Stephen's doorstep in England for a couple of years, and I was involved with the BCWI and doing work with the Visa Infinite program. So between the BCWI and Don House and myself and Jack, we kind of hatched a plan to share all of the things involved in getting Stephen over to BC. Part of it was also the Pinot Noir Festival.
Sure.
That Jack was so involved in. So it was many heads getting together and figuring out what we could show Stephen, how we could give him what he needed to learn about BC. You know, Stephen, he was first to market here, and he recognized that this place on the edge of the earth was worthy of certainly of his attention, and he was very, very curious about BC. So he was so amenable to us involving him in 3 main events here in BC. So, you know, it didn't take much convincing. He was very, very keen to come, and he graciously did. So one of the events that I thought would be a beautiful thing, and Don House and the BCWI and I created the Judgment of BC. And this is where, you know, we're a young region, a very young wine region. We need to be benchmarking our wines constantly.
Right. Yep.
And there was no better way to benchmark than to, you know, riff on this, you know, the OG of benchmarking, the prototype, as it were, of the Judgment of Paris, the Paris tasting. So that's what we did. We had 5 beautiful years of it. Stephen was there for the first and there for the last,
yep,
which was in 2019. And we learned so much along the way. And he did as well. That was the most amazing thing about this man, this titan, this icon, is that he tasted so many wines of the world over and over and over again. He remembered them all. He remembered the people who made them. And he was open-minded and curious about learning more, but always benchmarking it to the classics that he knew so well.
Hmm.
And every word that he said about the wines that he tasted in this province were always, linked with some classic example. And what he said about BC over and over and over again was, you know, with a lot of surprise and delight and eyes shining and twinkling, was, oh my goodness, you are the old world of the new world. He would say, don't tell the Burgundians. He was aware that we had something very special going on. This wonderful, you know, the fact that our wines are so rooted in structure. There's beautiful acidity. There's earthiness. We have tannins that are ripened in conjunction with you know, high levels of fruit. And this is a combination that you don't find in many places around the world. And Stephen, who's traveled everywhere in the wine world, was so aware of that. And he just keyed in instantly on what was distinctive about our best wines.
You know, as we DJ Kearney, by the way, who's the wine director at Terminal City Club, teaches at Pica, many other things. He's a wine judge, educator, and for hire. I was going to ask you what effect we had on him and what effect he had on us, but I think you kind of answered that. So my next question is, and I thought about this long and hard, his effect on the world of wine around the world in our lifetime, what is it? What is it?
Oh, I mean, it's momentous. First of all, he made everything very dignified. There's a lot of scrapping in the wine world, and Stephen just was always gracious to people and unfailingly fair. And I think that's something that we can all be reminded of, that, you know, wine is our matrix. It's about humanity. Yeah. It's about connections. It's about relationships. And he never was unkind to anyone. He was very, very fair about comments. And he had an encyclopedic memory. So he, whenever he said something about a wine, it was measured, it was incisive, it was based on, you know, a billion years of tasting memory. Yeah. And it, and if you didn't listen to every word that he said and take it seriously, then then, you know, not a good job by you. I think the fact that he was so kind, so gracious, always aware that wine is greater than we are, and that, you know, we don't, you know, we owe our living to wine, not the other way around. It was a beautiful thing. You know, I heard him, I always heard him focus on the positive things first. And that's something that he would always do if he was offering a critique on someone's wine. Mm-hmm. But then he would be very fair about where the shortcomings were. I remember him saying something that was, you know, you couldn't construe it as complimentary about someone's wine. And he immediately was aware that that person felt, you know, the little bit of a stab. And but Stephen had said very, very fair remarks, and he immediately said, you know, I think if you change this or you do that or you consider this, you know, the wine could be absolutely magnificent. So,
you know,
that's what he did. He was fair, he was honest, and it was backed up by tremendous knowledge and insight.
You know, Deej, we're in the golden age of documentaries right now, and somebody's going to put all of this together into a great documentary, because he's the kind of guy that you could tell a story about, and people would sit there for 90 minutes and watch it and listen to it and take it in, because he had so much to offer. By the way, those of you out there who think, Stephen Spurrier, if the name is, I mean, to all of us in and around wine, he's the guy. He's the guy, Judgment of Paris. He's the guy that set the whole thing in motion. And because what it did was it told the rest of the wine world, not in France, that they could match what France did if they did it right, like the Californians did that particular year. They could actually be on a level playing field, that they could grow wines all over the world and still be in the game. So that was for. But the thing is, the movie Bottle Shock, I got a chance to interview Alan Rickman about it, and he was pretty droll, as Rickman would be. But it's interesting to note that Stephen Spurrier said there's not a word in there that's true. It's just all bogus. So if you think you know Stephen Spurrier from Bottle Shock, nope.
No, I mean, there was another remake of that movie in the works, and I hope it does come out in the end. But no, I mean, he was not a fan of the movie, and it's not a good characterization of him. And I hope some documentary will capture Stephen's essence.
Yep.
You know, there are so many stories. I've been talking. Yesterday was a day just given over to texting and emailing and talking and sharing all of the photos that I have in my phone with people. It was just, it was very hard to do anything other than think about Stephen yesterday. And everybody has a different story around the world, and there'll be some sweet memory. You know, Sanka Tennant, who made Black Hills wines and then the beautiful Terra Vista wines, texted me to say how moved she was to have met him, and she thanked me for brokering that introduction.
Yes.
And how she remembered his words and treasured his little white card that she still has and was planning to visit him when we were allowed to travel. I mean, it's when you spoke to Stephen or shared a word or he tasted your wine, it was special. It was not offhand.
Yep.
You know, he looked you in the eye and he spoke from his heart and with a lot of honesty. And as I said, grounded in this remarkable experience of tasting all of the great wines and all of the, you know, oddities of the world repeatedly.
Yeah. I've included the two interviews I did with him, that one of Mendoza and the one at Judgment, so that people can hear his speaking voice and just know what a kind human he was. I have one suggestion, Deej, and I'll let you go, and that is it possible, as a way of honoring him, that we could create an award for that person, not of our own world, not of British Columbia, maybe not even of Canada, who best assists, suggests, adjudicates, and honors the work that happens here. Is it possible?
I love that idea. I think it's absolutely possible. Let me give it some thought and see how we can.
Okay.
Shoehorn that into something in the BC world. He had a big impact on our growth and success here. He wrote in Decanter, he wrote in Psalm magazine, and wherever he went around the world, he would tell people about his experiences in BC because he had recognized, if not discovered, something that we've all been circling around, but he's a lion of the wine world. And when he put it in his beautiful words, it had life, it had gravitas, it had much, much more meaning beyond what we talk about here.
She is DJ Kearney. She's the director of wine at Terminal City Club, an educator, adjudicator, teacher at PICA, and knowledge for hire. Thank you so much, Deej, for doing this. I feel sorry for all of our loss.
Yeah, I know. I'll be shedding tears for a long time to come about dear Stephen.
We'll open something.
Yes, indeed. Indeed. Whoa. How about some Bride Valley? You know, the sparkling wine
yes.
that he was so committed to with his lovely wife, Bella, is in the BCLDB, and having a few bottles of Bride Valley in the cellar is what I plan to do.
Very nice. Thank you, Deej.
Thank you, TDM. RIP SS.
This segment of Tasting Room Radio is brought to you by The Hatch. And since they've opened the new Crown and Thieves, it's been a glorious, sheer and utter madness. The success has seen them already sell out of four wines, The Scoundrel Punch, Chenin Blanc, Gewurztraminer, and Broken Wing Merlot. But luckily, the latest bottling run has replenished the stock with new vintages of Winemaker's Wench, Mr. Higginbotham Chardonnay, the new Little Nipper Pinot Gris, and the brand new Pinky Blinders Rosé. And all four will make their first appearances this weekend. The wine club has been selling like crazy, and an obvious benefit is one active membership means you are a VIP at all of their locations. All the details at thehatchwines.com. This segment of Tasting Room Radio is brought to you by Hillside Winery and Bistro on the Naramata Bench. The virtual tasting series is kicking off. You can enjoy a tasting in the comfort of your own home as your hosts, Kathy Malone, and the guest experience and wine club manager, Shalan, will taste and talk via Zoom on all things wine with you in the comfort of your home. And the upcoming dates are March the 25th and 26th at 7 p.m. Pacific. Three bottles of Hillside wine will be shipped directly to your door, and a live Q&A session with Kathy and Shalan. The wine shop and tasting room are reopening March the 17th, and the Bistro at Hillside, reopening date set for March the 17th, with a new menu and new executive chef. Meet the new chef, Evan Robertson, at the Bistro at Hillside Winery. All the details can be found at hillsidewinery.ca. My thanks to DJ Kearney for her comments on the late Steven Spurrier. Now, there may be some of you out there wondering why we would be spending this time on someone perhaps you've never heard of. But Steven Spurrier changed the wine world in 1976 in Paris when he had the audacity to bring in, sneak in wines from California and taste them against the best of the French. And to the dismay of the judges who were tasting that day, over two days, I think, they chose the California wines, red and white, over the French. Oh, my God, you couldn't believe the outrage that happened in Paris. And they insisted on another tasting, and exactly the same thing happened. They got fooled by their own taste buds. Anyway, it was Steven Spurrier who pulled off the judgment of Paris, 1976, and went on to become literally the prince of the wine world. He knew what he was talking about. He was very good judges of wine. He was a very good judge of wine. He was an exceptional ambassador. Wrote, of course, and edited for Decanter Magazine. And eventually started his own winery in England, making bubble. He's going to talk about it. Here's a conversation that I had with Stephen. Sitting on the stage, actually, it was low enough that we could just sit on the stage at the Argentine Wine Awards in Mendoza in 2014. And 5 years later, in the Okanagan, at the Judgment of BC, year six, the last judgment. And I had a chance to talk to him in the middle of the room. Enjoy.
Stephen, I have this theory. I'll run it by you and see what happens. We're in Argentina enjoying what Argentina gives the world, some of the surprises. If the shot heard around the world, if your tasting had not happened in Paris the way it unfolded, because the message that came from Paris was you can make world wines outside of France, California, etc. It had made so many changes. Would we see this world of wine today? Did it propel it forward?
Well, I mean, I think the Paris tasting was a benchmark event or a watershed event because it was the first crack in the superiority of French wine. And also, as you said, it told the Californians and then the world that you don't have to be French to make great wine. And that is now, it's now been accepted. The whole world is creating, Eduardo Chadwick has done the same thing with his Chilean wine. The whole wine world is open today. I've been 50 years in the trade this year, and it's a different animal to the wine trade I joined, very different.
I'm sure that you did your homework and have done over the years of Argentine wine, but there must have been some surprises there for you over this past week.
Yeah, I think they're getting more elegant. Elegant is an overused word, but they're getting more polished. They're more sophisticated without becoming too smart. Let's say I find the precision of flavors very good and the integration of oak very good. In the whole 3 days tasting, I hardly tasted any wines which were too oaky. And people now are talking about high alcohols, and of course Argentinian reds have to be 14, 14.5, 15 even, but the alcohols are well integrated, which is not the case in California.
And the one question that kept banging through my head as I was tasting maybe 100 Malbecs, whose version of Malbec will we hand the award to? There are so many different versions.
That'd be funny. I know there is some Malbec trophy. Obviously, there is, and maybe two. That is, it's in the eye of the it's in the eye of the consumer in the sense that, do you prefer Lafite or do you prefer Petrus, or if you're sticking in the Medoc, do you prefer Lafite to Mouton? That kind of thing. So, I'm a great fan of Mendel. I mean, I love the Mendel style. That doesn't mean I dislike the Trapiche style, but it's less my style of wine. And so I think what's nice, Michael Broadbent has this lovely expression, horses for courses. And this is what's great about Malbec. It's hard not to like Malbec. It's impossible not to like Malbec. But there's a Malbec for everybody. Yeah.
What do you want to tell the room today?
Well, I'm going to tell them that to keep the image of Argentina wine. That Argentina is in the UK market, it's just being discovered. It's now solid. It's the only new world country which grew in both volume and value this year with us. And it's mostly thanks to the independent wine merchants who don't sell on price. We sell on taste. They sell on taste. So that's basically, as Patricio said, you've arrived. Argentina's arrived. To keep going that way, keep creating, and don't compete on price.
What website can we send our audience to?
What website?
Yes.
Decanter. Well, yeah, I mean, the Decanter has its website. I don't have a website. Sorry.
That's so 60s, Steve.
Yeah,
thank you.
Sorry,
thank you.
Okay, thanks.
This is Tasting Room Radio. I'm Terry David Mulligan. That's a conversation we had with Steven Spurrier, 2014, at the Argentine Wine Awards in Mendoza, Argentina. And he was judging and speaking in panels and bringing his expertise to the Argentine wine industry. So now, 5 years later, he's in the Okanagan at the Judgment of BC 2019, the last one. He's the keynote speaker. He's a judge. He's a friend of the people in the room. And here's a very enlightening conversation with Steven Spurrier right after the judgment was finished and we had a chance to talk.
You were going over your notes, Steven. It can be a humbling experience when you taste a wine, you think you absolutely know where the wine is from, and it's not, which is the great thing about winemaking. There are always lessons to be learned.
I entirely agree. I mean, I think one's learning all the time. The best quote came from Harry Waugh, the great Harry Waugh, about, 40 years ago at least, and he was asked at a big tasting in Chicago, somewhere like that, 100 people in the room, and someone put up their hand at the evening tasting. They said, "Mr. Waugh, have you ever mistaken Burgundy for Bordeaux?" And Harry paused a bit and said, "No, not since lunch." So I think that sums up where it is.
What were your thoughts going in? I mean, you've been here before. You've seen this process. Were you okay with the varietals being poured?
Absolutely. I mean, I thought we kicked off the morning with Pinot Noir, and the range of Pinot Noirs was very good, very high quality. Because there was a column on the tasting sheet, whether it was BC or international, I was obviously looking for which it was, and I gave the more fruity wines the BC box, and the more vegetal wines or less fruity the international box. And then you go to Chardonnay, and it was very difficult because they were quite similar. And I think what the BC wines have is a sense of precision, which I don't think they've been working towards that. When I was here 4 or 5 years ago, they were still a little bit influenced by trying to make fruity wines which would appeal to people. Now they're making wines which reflect their vineyard, and that is so important.
There's some focus there. You had a speech, I guess it was last night, up the lake at the campus, if I'm not mistaken. What did you tell those folks?
I'm Dave McIntyre, and I, we were at the Okanagan School or something like that. And there was a lot of local people, and this was, what did we think? And we had John Skinner and Tony Holler and Christine Colata and Daryl there, but the questions were kind of coming to us, and we were answering them in a very upfront way, and I think we were very positive about the future of BC wines. Mm. Very positive, because what was interesting, Dave McIntyre lives in Washington, so he's Virginia, and Virginia wines suffer from the same problem as BC wines, because they're cool climate wines. Mm. And so Napa rules the roost and that kind of stuff. It's not Napa, it's Oregon. If it's not Oregon, it's Washington State, and so on and so forth. But actually, the Virginia wines are very complex and very different. And I think this Virginia wines are now getting themselves recognized. And this, I think, is BC, that you've chosen to maybe do 6 or 7 or 8 varietals. Mm-hmm. There's no point in playing the game, trying to do everything. And you're doing them very well indeed.
Yeah.
And there's been a lot of ripping out, budding over, all that kind of stuff. When a varietal doesn't work, you change it. And that, I think that's what happens.
How goes the publishing business?
Well, you're talking about my Academy of Divine Library thing?
Yeah.
I couldn't be happier about that. We just published a book on Sherry by my school friend Ben Harkins. We're publishing at the end of next month In Vino Veritas, which is a copy of The Completing Bible, which I'm sure you knew, edited by Cyril Ray. And that's anecdotes, wine writing, illustrated from the old world to the new world. It's the best of the past, the best of the present. I'm thrilled.
But it's the shape of the company, how you're getting those words to people who want to read them. The publishing business is just in turmoil, and can you describe how people can access your books, where they go, and how they do it?
Well, we're being very inactive in the sense we're not selling to bookstores. We're certainly not dreaming to sell to Amazon. We're forming a club of people. We've got a newsletter monthly called Vinocity. We've got tons and tons of our friend wine writers doing something for that. We're an online magazine, but we have distributors in each country. And so Mark Nado, who owns with me the Academy of Our Name, is the distributor for Canada. Bartholomew Broadbent is one of the distributors from America. It's a slow burn, but the name is L'Académie Divine Library, and we're looking for these books to end up in people's bookshelves. Mm-hmm. And if somebody, he or she finds out about L'Académie Divine Library in 3 years' time, there will be 15 books that he or she can choose from, and they will all be in print. None of our books will ever go out in print.
That's what got my attention.
Yeah. But we're printing 2,000 copies. We're not ambitious, but we have sufficient financial backing to make it work.
Did I read that you're headed for San Francisco for another awards, another competition?
I'm heading to Andy Dyer's Blues San Francisco wine competition on the 8th and 9th of November. First time I've been there judging Andy's competition for about 25 years. And I'm so much looking forward to it.
Have you kept up with California wines, per se?
In the sense that they keep up with me, put it that way. Yeah. No, in the sense that I love going to California wine tastings to see what's going on. It's changing the whole time. I love seeing my old friends like Stag's Leap and Clos du Val and Ridge and so on and so forth, making even better and better wine. And so Napa, California, is in my heart because that was my first New World country I ever went to. And but they're not the only game in town.
Yeah.
Anymore.
Do they know that?
I think they're being told that.
All right, one final thing. When will you step off this path that you're on, or would you just thrust your chest through the finish line and keep going?
Well, I planted a vineyard in Dorset on my wife's property. Well, we planted it in 2009. We've just finished our vineyard. My wife sent me an email this morning saying, vintage finished, 70 tons, we're all happy. And we've had a lot of rain, too much rain, far too much rain, and far too much cold weather, and we've lost a whole block of Pinot Noir to rot. But it's much better than we thought it would be. Less good than we thought it would be, much better than we thought we would end up. So that's good. So the vineyard is long-term, so any vineyard is long-term. You have to think generations. The Academy of Divine Library is also long-term, and as well as I can write my name and drink a glass of wine, I'm going to stay in the wine business.
Will you join the British bubble revolution? Will you be making bubbles?
Well, I'm making bubbles, very much so. Yeah, my wine is called Bride Valley because we're in an area of natural beauty called the Bride Valley. And so I wouldn't say we're the go-to wine for weddings, but it's quite a nice name.
Will we see any of it here?
Oh yeah, Barbara Phillip bought some for the Vancouver
stores.
Yeah. It's still, I think the stuff is still available because at Martin Lane yesterday for lunch they managed to find a bottle. Yeah, but the bottle of Bella Rose, named after my wife, or Rose Bella. 14, but I think we'll send some over. We're imported by Boisset, and Boisset supply Canada for us.
Charming individual. You'll see him in San Francisco.
Jean Charles is so charismatic that he's the only person who shows off more than I do. Well, I didn't show off, but Jean-Charles is the ultimate.
He's all of that.
He's
he supported his wife well. She went through a battle with cancer, and they came out the other side.
I didn't know that. I'm very pleased to hear that.
Oh, yeah.
I did not know that.
Well, so there was a whole bunch of kids involved.
They're lovely twins, the two princesses.
Yep. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much. Thanks a lot.
This segment of Tasting Room Radio is brought to you by Hillside Winery and Bistro on the Naramata Bench. The virtual tasting series is kicking off. You can enjoy a tasting in the comfort of your own home as your hosts, Kathy Malone, and the guest experience and wine club manager, Shellan, will taste and talk via Zoom on all things wine with you in the comfort of your home. And the upcoming dates are March the 25th and 26th at 7 p.m. Pacific. Three bottles of Hillside wine will be shipped directly to your door and a live Q&A session with Kathy and Shellan. The Wine Shop and Tasting Room are reopening March the 17th, and the Bistro at Hillside, reopening date set for March the 17th, with a new menu and new executive chef. Meet the new chef, Evan Robertson, at the Bistro at Hillside Winery. All the details can be found at hillsidewinery.ca. This segment of Tasting Room Radio is brought to you by Enrico Winery in the Cowichan Valley. Spring bottling date is fast approaching. They're very excited about their white wine spring release, Pinot Gris The Shining Armor. Always a crowd favorite. Recent winner of a gold medal at the Okanagan Best of Varietal Awards. That new release is going to be one of the hits of the summer. And of course, their crowd favorite, Tempest Ortega. Just a note that a couple of mix and match sales are on. They're slowly opening the tasting room up. Currently Wednesday to Saturday, 12 to 4. Starting in April, it'll expand to 5 days a week from 10 to 5, and live music will start in April, Saturdays only. You can find all the details at EnricoWinery.com. This is Tasting Room Radio. I'm Terry David Mulligan, and there are two people that I really did want to talk to right away. One was DJ Kearney. We had a chance to talk to her. The other is Reese Pender, who, of course, is a master of wine, is deeply involved in the WSET Wine School, Wine Plus, and is the co-owner of Little Farm Winery in the Similkameen Valley. Reese, hello, my friend. Are you well?
Hello. Yeah, I'm good. Yeah. Okay. Beautiful spring weather here, so yeah. Can't wish for any more.
That's what you need. How your reaction when you first heard of Stephen Spurrier's passing?
Oh, just so sad. You know, he's you know, so many, everyone I've spoken to and, you know, texted and whatever over these last few days, it's just sort of, you know, was so touched by his kind of generosity and his enthusiasm for wine. And, you know, like, I got to see him every year judging at Decanter, and he was also out visiting us here in BC a couple of times in the last 5 years. And, you know, just the amount of enthusiasm for wine that he has, and always learning, and, you know, then always sharing his knowledge. And like everyone I've talked to has had the, you know, just the exact same feeling. And then it's just such a loss for the wine world, because he was just, you know, great for everyone and just such a great supporter of wine in general and the world of wine.
And he wasn't hard to get to know, was he? Because he was outspoken. He would engage in conversation. So how old were you when the Judgment of Paris happened in 1976? So you even been born yet?
Well, I would have been one, so I don't remember it. Didn't get on my radar at the time, but
that's what the audience is hearing. They're hearing about the Judgment of Paris 1976, and maybe they saw Bottle Shock, which Stephen says had not a word of truth in it, but he did make something happen. He challenged the French and their pride to taste blind, matching wines from somewhere else. Did he tell them it was California, or was it just he wanted to taste up against the French?
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know exactly how he ran it, because, you know, back in at that time, there was the New World wines were kind of, you know, not really considered
available.
Anything special, and not really available. It's nothing like it is today, where we have such a global wine world, and so, you know, it was quite revolutionary. But to me, all that says is just, you know, and that's how he was for his entire life. He's just so open and, you know, wanted to explore and you know, gave every region a chance. And that's why he loved traveling around the world. I believe you were with him in Argentina, you know, and he's come out here to Canada a couple of times, and just he's enthralled by the wines everywhere, and you know, sees the potential and the good, rather than a lot of people come and they judge and they, you know, see what's wrong and what's, you know, not good. But he was the opposite. He always came kind of looking for the positive and oh, you know, work on this, do this. This is what's great about your wines and your region. And, you know, he said some beautiful things about BC wine, which I think to a lot of producers here, just really, they're like, you know, gave them some confidence to keep doing what they're doing and keep, you know, making the kind of wines they were. It was just really sort of kind words. I think he, what did he say? We're kind of like the, I can't remember exactly how he put it, but we're sort of like this, the old world of the new world or something like that. Mm-hmm. And because we get this great vibrancy and acidity and freshness and elegance to the wines, but with all this fruit as well. And like, I think he was really enamored by the wines here.
And he would tell his friends back, actually he would tell the world, wouldn't he? In Decanter and where, when he traveled, he would mention Canadian and British Columbia wines in his speeches.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, he definitely referred to it. I think he just always saw the best of every wine in every region, and was such a great supporter of those. And wanted, you know, that's part of his generosity that I mentioned before, is he wanted to just share good things about the wine world with whoever was there to listen, wherever they might be.
Now the statement is made, and we know about it, both you and I and anybody in the wine world. That is, the wine world changed in 1976, in May of 76, when he held this blind tasting in Paris with the best of wines and the very best of judges, and some of the French wine judges were outraged and said that the fix was in. But the fact still remains is the one line that comes away from it is it changed the wine world from that moment on. And my worker bee take on it is that the results showed that wherever you were growing your wines, whether it was Slovakia, whether it was New Zealand, Australia, South Africa, whatever, wherever you were, you could make wines comparable to the French if you followed certain thing, if you took care of business, if you really took care of your vineyards and your growing processes and your winemaking. This is true, yes?
Yeah, this is it. Yeah, I think it's definitely a moment of realization for both, you know, the new world producers that they can, and for the old world producers that, you know, holy crap, we don't have a monopoly on this world of wine. That was their, you know, the warning shot across the bowels for them too, right? That they to wake up and you know, there's a great world out there. Today we kind of take all this for granted. I think this diverse world of wine, we can go into any store here and buy, you know, wine from 50 different countries, right? And we kind of take that for granted a little bit. But you know, events like Stephen's event that he put on there, the judgment, has allowed that to become a reality. I think it's definitely one of those key moments that has helped that, you know, become what we know today.
Rhys Pender, Master of Wine, co-owner of Little Farm Winery. We'll get to that in a second. WSET Wine Plus. What was it like tasting at Decanter? I mean, wine tastings are basically the same format, but what was the feeling like being there?
Yeah, I love judging the Decanter World Wine Awards. You know, there's something like, I think it's something like 200 judges, and this is all like the top wine brains from around the world. You know, pretty much every book you've read, the author is in one of the rooms, and the, you know, top experts on each region, masters, sommeliers, masters of wine. Like, it's just such a great group of people. And for the last number of years, Stephen's been kind of one of the head judges. And so occasionally what happens when you're judging, you know, we're debating a wine, and there's a bit of a difference between the judges on the panel. And so we would call in one of the head judges, right? And so quite often, you know, Stephen, we'd call him in, he'd taste the wine, and just we enter into a really, you know, good discussion about the merits of it. And then, you know, he'd kind of have the final kind of say on where it fell from, what kind of metal and things like that. And, you know, those are always kind of the most fun parts, when it's just a wine, but we, you know, we give every wine such a the chance, right? And if someone's passionate about a wine, thinks that it's really great, then you can call in that extra head judge and get their opinion. And, and those are the best discussions that you, you know, you have in around the wine. It's the, it gets quite philosophical sometimes. And he was always just so, so good at seeing, you know, the benefits in the wine and discussing it. And yeah, it was always a great honor to do that.
Hey, Reese, last question about Stephen himself. And this is, we're too close to it right now, but I'm just thoughts on his legacy going forward.
Yeah, I think, yeah, like it's, like you said, it's very, very close, but I would say, his manner of being in the wine world, you know, probably when he started, the wine world was a very snobby place. And it's people like him who, before it was kind of fashionable to do so, he sort of ended that, right? He made it not snobbish. He, not just about classic Bordeaux and stuffiness. And, you know, he was one of those who, like, putting on this judgment and traveling around the world and talking about great wines from around the world, you know, he's taken that stuffiness out of it and made it approachable and just something that's interesting for people. So I think that's definitely part of the legacy. And I think everyone who probably met him would have, you know, would want to kind of emulate that as well. And the way he was just so open-minded and enthusiastic. And like I keep saying, if I can be as enthusiastic and passionate about learning about wine still when, you know, I'm into my 70s, and then, you know, that's going to be the best, right? So that, I think that's his legacy. It's just that passion and enthusiasm that he carried through to his last days.
Thank you, Reese Bender. Thank you for doing that. Reese Bender, Master of Wine, WSET Wine School, Wine Plus, and the co-owner of Little Farm Winery in the Similkameen. The guy who makes just enough rosé to get your interest, and then it's gone. Thank you for doing this, and thank you for speaking on behalf of Stephen Spurrier. I appreciate it very much.
Yeah, thanks for having me on. And
this segment of Tasting Room Radio is brought to you by Enrico Winery in the Cowichan Valley. Spring bottling date is fast approaching. They're very excited about their white wine spring release, Pinot Gris The Shining Armor. Always a crowd favorite. Recent winner of a gold medal at the Okanagan Best of Varietal Awards. That new release is going to be one of the hits of the summer. And of course, their crowd favorite, Tempest Ortega. Just a note that a couple of mix-and-match sales are on. They're slowly opening the tasting room up. Currently Wednesday to Saturday, 12 to 4. Starting in April, it'll expand to 5 days a week from 10 to 5, and live music will start in April, Saturdays only. You can find all the details at EnricoWinery.com. This segment of Tasting Room Radio is brought to you by Moon Cursor. Lots of new wines coming, which is a good thing, since they've sold out of everything but a little bit of Dead of the Night and the award-winning Tarriga Nacional. The new wines will be available for sale in the tasting room and online by mid to late April. Moon Cursor will continue with appointment-only tastings, but will accommodate walk-in customers whenever possible. Because of the expected lower-than-normal yields of 2019, they will have less wine for sale this year than they normally would, and they're encouraging everyone, including the club members, to stock up now rather than later. All the details at mooncursor.com. This is Tasting Room Radio. I'm Terry David Mulligan. And it feels like spring is around the corner. It really does, especially in the Okanagan and here on the coast in the Neuse Bay. We have been honoring the memory and the friendship and the leadership of the amazing Stephen Spurrier. And we played you a couple of interviews that I did with him, one in Mendoza, Argentina, and one in the Okanagan, and talked to DJ Kearney, great friend of his, and Reese Pender, another great friend of his. We needed those reflections on this guy and the fact that it was the judgment in Paris. And if that's all you know about him, there's a lot more to know about Stephen Spurrier, and we remember him. Now we move on to another loss. And I welcome my friend Jason Parks, who is the leader at Crown and Thieves and The Hatch and many other movements afoot. Hello there, Jace.
Hey, man. How you doing?
I'm good. Did you ever meet at any time, just happened across Stephen Spurrier?
I don't think I was fortunate enough, no.
Okay.
I don't think I did get a chance, yeah.
But you do know about Judgment of Paris. I think we all do. We all know something about
that.
Yeah. Brought those California wines in and blind tasted and bamboozled the Parisian, the judges especially.
No, that's a punk rock story. That's a good one.
That's a good story. You had to know the way out the door. You had to know where the exit was in that room. It's as simple as that. I saw a post that came to me just a couple of days ago from Crown and Thieves, in loving memory of Amy Parks. It stopped me right in my tracks. I had no idea about this loss. And if you can give me some of the backstory on the post, it would help me a lot to understand.
Okay. Yeah. Well, Amy was my cousin. She was a victim, I guess. She was a full-on victim of domestic abuse, and she was sadly murdered. I think it was about 4 years ago now, here in Kelowna. My aunt came over from England, her mom, and wanted, a bit of support in the courtroom. So I'd go with her, and the whole family would go and sit with her and stuff. And, when it was all said and done, though, because I was kind of beside myself, obviously, it's an emotional thing. You don't know, you got anger, you got sadness, all this stuff in you, and you're in a courtroom. We got outside the courtroom, though, and she looked at me and she goes, "Jason, how come you've had nothing to say?" And, I thought about that, and I had nothing to say at that point, but I went home and I wrote a song, very quickly wrote the words and basic chord progressions, and lucky enough, I've got a really great band, and the next day we put it together. I basically just wrote it for her mom. It's where it came from, just to give my words. I don't speak that well, but I've done a lot of music. I can speak through music easier, and that's where it all started, and it kind of grew from there.
And the song, did the song come easily?
Yeah, no, the words flew out. I was quite furious sitting in the courtroom watching it all go down. So I don't want to get too into it because I got to be careful politically what you say, but I really wish I could have hockey fight the guy because that would have been a fun way to deal with it. Yeah.
Your post says, "Crown Thieves, in loving memory of Amy Parks and in honor of International Women's Day, we are donating $1 for every bottle of rosé sold to the Kelowna Women's Shelter. For the remainder of the month of March, and you may even carry on if you start this rolling."
100%, it's going to go on forever. She loved rosé. She loved her sparkling rosé. Really, really bubbly girl, real caring girl. We've got her picture up on the wall. I've got a library of wines and Crown and Thieves, and her picture's front and center. And we will always give some money, $1 a bottle, to that charity. And all the other locations are doing it for the rest of this month. So the Hatch is doing it, Blacksmith's doing it. We've got a good like eight or nine rosés and some sparkling rosés. So the whole company came to me and said it wasn't a requirement. All the employees and management, everyone came to me and said, "Let's just do it across the board, Jason." And everyone was pretty cool on it. So that was a nice feeling. Yeah.
How many bottles are we talking about? How many cases have you got of the rosé?
We got lots to sell throughout the company. We don't expect to sell it all, but that would be beautiful. There's probably a good, 4,500 cases worth of rosé. But at Crown and Thieves, a particular release is called Pinky Blinders. It's a brand new release, and we got about 350 cases of that.
Very nice. And I'm sure the Kelowna Women's Shelter is going to appreciate these donations.
They hit us up, and very heartfelt thank you. Really appreciated it.
And you can find, find a way to donate through this rosé at Hatch Wines, at Blacksmith Vineyards, at Crown Thieves, no and in the middle, Crown Thieves. And we will, I spent close to 5 years as a Mountie, and literally it seemed like every day there was another domestic violence household that I had to step into. I saw it up close, and it is ugly. And can't go away fast enough. And those responsible must be held responsible. But I noticed that in your song "Ink Runs Dry," there's a lot of anger there from you. You felt you kind of get a sense, of course, that did not turn out the way you thought it would.
Yeah, massive anger. Anger, obviously, for the individual that was part of it, but also, again, I don't want to get political, but sitting in the courtroom and listening to how they dealt with it and finding ways to almost protect this individual's act, really, really, I was embarrassed. I was embarrassed for our system, to be honest with you. It was hard, very hard to do.
Well, let's do this for Amy Parks then. Pinky Blinders, my friend. Buy it for yourself, and buy it for someone else and make sure they get it. Stock it away, you know, make this the rosé of your summer. Let's do right by Amy. Before I let you go, everybody, well, not everybody, but most of the wineries that I've been talking to are bottling now. Are you guys going crazy bottling?
Yeah, we bottled 24 SKUs last week. It took a couple of weeks to bottle it, and it's all just rosés and whites, and they're vibrant and fresh. And I don't say this without, you know, thinking I got to back it up in the coming months, but I feel that we've done the team, the guys in the cellar, Corey, JR, you know, it's the best year that we've had for whites and rosés. I'm very proud of the group. We've got some really great wines coming up.
And what has the reaction been to opening Black Swift Vineyards?
To Black Swift, it's been great. It's been growing slow and steady, but very, very cult-like following. A lot of the locals are coming back into it all the time and making it a place to sit and have some wines. And we keep these places open during the winter. That's just our philosophy, to keep the staff working. We put them through WSET courses and train them and get them better. So yeah, the local community has been very receptive to Black Swift.
And Crown Thieves?
Crown Thieves has been great. It's been a poop show, I guess. I don't swear on TV. It's a lot more than, or on radio, sorry. It's been a lot more than I expected. And the support from the locals are keep coming back. Like we've had days where there's lineups in the snow going into the orchard, and warms my heart and breaks my heart because they're cold, but there's also the COVID measures, so we got to be very strict on that. But the local community has been so good.
It does feel like you've turned a corner. It really does. You've opened your location.
Yeah.
You're making your dreams come true.
Yeah, yeah. I have to pinch myself and stay focused because now I got to manage it. I don't know if I'm all good dreaming, but now I got to, you know, run it. It's a lot of work.
Okay.
But it's fun. We're having a lot of fun.
Is it okay if I finish with Ink Runs Dry? Can we finish this whole conversation just by playing the tune and finishing the show?
Yeah, that'd be such an honor. Yeah, thank you.
Okay. I know it's been 4 years since she's been gone, but it feels like she's still here.
Yeah.
Thank you for this. Thanks, Jason.
Okay, man.
Jason Parks, cellar hand, the man leading the teams at the Hatch. And once again, you can raise funds in the loving memory of Amy Parks, and you can find all the details, well, all of the details at Hatch Wines, at Black Swift Vineyards, at Crown Thieves, and the monies, $1 from each bottle of rosé, Pinky Blinders, will go to the Kelowna Women's Shelter. And here's the song that says what Jason couldn't say in the courtroom, Ink Runs Dry, and we'll leave you with this on Tasting Room Radio. Thank you for listening. Take care of yourself. Every tear and every breath. This segment of Tasting Room Radio is brought to you by Moon Cursor. Lots of new wines coming, which is a good thing, since they've sold out of everything but a little bit of Dead of the Night and the award-winning Tarrega Nacional. The new wines will be available for sale in the tasting room and online by mid to late April. Moon Cursor will continue with appointment-only tastings, but will accommodate walk-in customers whenever possible. Because of the expected lower-than-normal yields of 2019, they will have less wine for sale this year than they normally would, and they're encouraging everyone, including the club members, to stock up now rather than later. All the details at mooncursor.com.